in barrels of fresh, clean water. And when the planes landed, some oil had got into the water and nobody could drink it. And he said, if you don't create the cause, you cannot get the result. It's like, no matter how hard you try to help somebody, if the cause is not there, you can't. And this is a question that often comes up. Well, you know, you see somebody suffering, you know you can help, but you can't help them because it's like, you just can't do it. You can't change things. You can only change things when there's the conditions have come together for it to change. And it's the same with our own minds. No matter how much we want to change our minds, until we've created the causes for them to change, they're not going to change. So this is a facet of karma. And what this means is that if you want to achieve, if you want to develop loving kindness, compassion, you want to realize the ultimate nature, reality, wisdom, if you want all these things, you can accomplish them, but only if you create the cause. If you create the cause, you get the result. If you don't create the cause, it's never going to happen. It doesn't happen just by sitting praying for it. You have to create the cause. And the fourth fact is, they say that once the cause is being created, it has to be experienced out. So if it's a negative action, then it will result in suffering unless you purify it. And if it's a positive action, it will result in happiness unless you destroy it by getting angry like this. So this is explanation of karma. In terms of morality, so we talk about avoiding the 10 non-virtues, but there's also practicing the opposite of those. And that's very easy. The opposite of killing is protecting life. Like you see an insect drowning and you just scoop it out and put it onto a tissue and it's fine again. The opposite of stealing is being generous. The opposite of sexual misconduct is responsible sexual conduct. The opposite of lying is being honest and truthful. The opposite of divisive speech is healing wounds, bringing people together, healing friendships. The opposite of harsh words is speaking kindly. The opposite of idle gossip is using the speech in a meaningful way. The opposite of covetousness is having a content and generous mind. The opposite of ill will is a mind of loving kindness. And the opposite of wrong views is wisdom. You don't need to say any more than that, do you? Because we just have to say the words and the meaning is incorporated within it. So the 10 non-virtues, and we have these things called the 5 precepts. So when Rinpoche is talking about morality as being a foundation, he's talking about the 10 non-virtues, but also the 5 precepts. And these 5 precepts, that generally when you take refuge, take 5 precepts, at least one of them. They're not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, no sexual misconduct, and no intoxicants. Now, a friend of mine told me, she's a Theravada nun, she told me, one time she went to discourse by a Theravada monk, and he made the point that every single problem existing in this world today would not exist if everybody kept these 5 precepts. All the wars, all the abuse, all the tragedies would not happen if everyone kept 5 precepts. So these 5 precepts seem very simple, but actually my teacher says, you know, to keep these 5 precepts is really one of the best contributions you can make to world peace. You know, we are empowered to do that. So morality, ethics. The third one is compassion. And Rinpoche says, faith and compassion are the 2 most essential ones. So on the basis of not harming ethics, then having faith and having compassion. And the fourth one, was if you can have a realization of emptiness, but that's been more difficult. But I say maybe detachment. Many years ago, I went down to Cornwall to see a healer there. I was a very good healer, it was recommended to me. And I was having quite a lot of pain. And anyway, so I went to see this guy. I was living in a remote place in Cornwall. Went with a friend. And he did this healing, and then I was talking to him, and I was asking him about being a healer, and he said, well, anyone can be a healer. He's not Buddhist or anything. And then he said, but you need to have two qualities. And he told me these two qualities, and I thought, well, that's really very similar to what says in Buddhism. He said, you need two qualities, and they seem like opposites, but actually they're not, they complement each other. And he said, the first one is unconditional love. And the second one is complete detachment. Complete detachment and unconditional love. So the qualities of a healer. Now I wanted to do that. I wanted to talk about karma. And what happens with karma is when we create an action, whatever action we create has a result. And it's not just one result, it's four results. Four types of result happen. And this explains that there are four different aspects to any action that's created when it's a complete action. There is the object that's involved, there's intention in our minds and the presence of a delusion. And there is the action we do, and then there's the completion when we think, oh, it's good I did that. And these ripen in four different ways. And one of the ways they ripen is in terms of us having a similar experience. So if we criticize others, then this can ripen in the future as us being criticized. But another way in which it ripens, which is the most difficult one, the most serious one, is that we set up a tendency. So because we've done an action in the past, it's like we kind of get driven in the future to do the same action again and again and again. It's become a habit. And this one you see in terms of small children. You know, some little kids, two kids from the same mother, the same father, the same parents, and one of them can be incredibly generous and kind. They just keep, you know, I've seen kids and you go to the home and they just keep handing you fruit and plates and they're, you know, so compassionate and kind and loving, and you know, they cry if the guinea pig's got a sore paw and I don't know what. And then, you know, other kids, and it's like there they are pulling the legs off spiders. Not because mum and dad taught them to, and they're going down the shop and they're filching sweets and sticking them in their... And nobody taught them to do this. To just do it. I mean, this has just come out. Like, nobody taught the little kid to cry when the guinea pig hurts his paw. I remember my mum taking me fishing for flounders, and you have a long piece of wood and a nail, and you go along the bottom, and you walk along the beach, and you go, boom, like that. The flounders, they're these flat fish, and you spear them, and the blood comes out, and I remember being just devastated that this creature was killed. So there must be some imprint, you know, because mum was taking me out, so why would I be devastated? I mean, mum was taking me. So therefore it was perfect acceptable behaviour. I'm saying this because you must have similar things in you. You must have similar imprints in you. Some people from a young age, they just don't want to see killing. I don't want to kill, I don't want to harm. So this is an indication in past, we've stopped doing it. Therefore it's habitual. So in this life, when we come into this life, we bring with us the imprints from past lives. When all those different consciousnesses and everything absorb, it's explained that the very last moment of consciousness, that particular thought, whether virtuous or non-virtuous, throws us to the next life. And when we get to the next life, we bring with us all these seeds and imprints from the past. So therefore nothing is wasted, nothing we do in this life is wasted, because we carry it on, just as we're carrying on a whole stream that we've brought with us now. We carry on whatever work we do now into the future. If we set up a habit of generosity and not killing, that will go with us into the future. It's a little bit like a fire. You make a fire and it blazes, and then it dies down, but you still have the embers. And the next morning, if you've covered the embers, then you can blow on those embers and fan them and put new fuel on, and they'll come up again. It's a bit like that with our lives, you know. If you put good habits, if you develop the nature of compassion and wisdom, and you have all these imprints, okay, you die and you go to another life. But even you, you're stuck in a Western body and you don't even see a monk or a nun or a Buddha till you're 30 or 40 or 50. But when you do, you have an imprint there, and it starts to glow again. And so you put fuel on that fire and it starts to burn again. And you carry on the work that you have to do. Did you?
I have a bit of a question. It may be quite simple, but if one stops killing midway through their life, is it karma sort of like because you killed at the beginning of your life, and then you go into another life, do you sort of have that imprint of killing, or because the end of your life you stop killing, that you kind of got rid of that, and so you come in and you won't kill, or is it that you kind of
Well, if the beginning part of it, so how karma ripens, they say there's three different factors involved. So how karma ripens, they say the karma that's the closest, like at the point of death, the karma that's the closest ripens first. The karma that's the strongest ripens first. So let's say you kill the first part of your life, but then the last 20 years of your life, you just always rigorously avoided harming and killing and you protected life. That's the strongest one at the time of death, because that's your habit, then that's the one that ripens. Then if it's equally strong, the killing and the not killing, then I've already got this one. So the closest one ripens first, then the strongest one, and then if they're equally strong, then it's the first one that you did ripens first. But what we do in Buddhism is we not only stop the actions, the negative actions that we're doing, and set up new patterns, new actions, we also purify the imprints from the previous actions. So if you were to stop killing now, first of all, let's say you just decide to stop killing. Already, you are from now on not going to have any karma of killing anymore if you make that intention and you keep it. So that's very powerful, isn't it? But on top of that, if you were to make a vow, then not only when you have the option of killing and you don't kill are you creating virtue, but 24 hours a day you're creating virtue. Because you have actually committed that for 24 hours a day you will not kill. Therefore, whether you have the option of killing or not killing, because you're living in a vow not to kill, you are purifying your mind stream with that vow. Then the next thing you do is you have all these imprints in your mind from killing, so you purify them. How do you purify them? You generate a mind of regret for having killed in the past. And then you have a sense of refuge, a sense of compassion. And then you do something to antidote that negative action that you did. So let's say you kill a lot of fish. So what could you do? Well, one thing you could do is you could save a lot of lives. How do you save lives? Well, you can go to the bait shop and buy a lot of worms and do prayers and release them. Find creatures that are going to be killed and release them. My friend used to say, sponsor Amnesty International. So she said that in Singapore, which is like a dictatorship and it's banned, and then she thought, But she used to say, sponsor Amnesty International, because they had tried to release people from prison. You know, do something good. You can. There are very powerful purification mantras like Vajrasattva that actually cause the negative karmas, negative imprints you put on your mind to ripen now faster. You might get a headache, you might get sick, but then it's gone. You purify it now. And then what do? You make the decision you're not going to do it again. Simply by generating regret, my teacher says, simply by generating a mind of regret, already so much purification takes place. Simply when you regret something, the stronger the regret, the stronger the purification. So otherwise, if we didn't believe that, we couldn't change. We couldn't become enlightened, you see. So that's how we deal with it. I mean, one of my best friends is a monk. Not my best friends, but a friend of mine is a monk. He's been a monk for years and years and years. Actually, I think he's been a monk since he was about 21 or something. Some of you will know him, Steve. He was translating for Geshe Kendo Rinpoche. He told me when he was younger, he used to go fishing. And I did this Buddhist course, and thought, And many women have the experience of having an abortion, you know, and they come along to Buddhist teachings. And suddenly it's like, oh my God, what did I do? But nobody told them to feel bad. They just, it wasn't explained to them at the time. And then generally my teacher, he used to say, you know, do 3 months retreat, do Vajrasattva retreat, purify, and they go off and they purify and clean up that karma, you see. And they would feel so much better because they were carrying a wound around with them that hadn't been dealt with. Why do we do negative actions? Because of ignorance. Because we didn't know. And everybody else told us it was okay. Or we just followed, you see. We had no awareness. We didn't know. We didn't mean bad. We just didn't know. You see what I mean? This is my Rigpa. We didn't know. You know, why do people kill? Why are they all going off fishing and killing? Because they just don't know. They haven't felt the difference between having that awareness and not having that awareness. And that helps compassion to arise. So you're not sitting there on a chair saying, oh, you know, we're really good because we're Buddhists, we don't kill, and they're nasty people. I mean, no, you don't feel like that at all. You just feel compassion. Like, I really wish I could explain to these people, but until the time is right, they will just get angry. They will just get angry. I was in Florida and I went down the pier and these guys were fishing. And I thought some of them were looking at me kind of a bit angry, you know. Well, we don't want a Buddhist nun around when we're fishing. I mean, I don't really feel that comfortable when I'm around people who are fishing anyway. It's like I just don't quite know what to do. It almost feels like the whole environment's polluted a little bit. It's like a beautiful place and there's this guy fishing. It's like, okay, hasn't caught anything, but there's the intention. But you see, they're doing it partly because they don't know. It's recreation, it's sport. It's just a way to pass time. You know, probably Daddy said, you know, it's very relaxing and it will help you. And take your son out and do it, you know, it's bonding. It's a way of bonding. I think the same with shooting. It's a way of bonding, you know, dad and son go out shooting. So it's just not knowing. And it's like that with all these things that we do, we just didn't know. But then when you do know, then that's the difference, isn't it? That's when you can stop and that's when you can purify. A friend of mine, he's an Australian monk, and he was a millionaire. He was an interesting guy. He's the one who went off to Burma and did the meditation, by the way. His homeless told him to go off and meditate. So he was a millionaire, and he made his money sheep and cattle. He was a butcher. He was a very successful butcher. His father was a butcher, he was a butcher. So he was the first person in, I think he was the first person in Australia to have a car phone. It's not a big deal these days, they try and get rhythm. He told me he used to fly first class, stay in penthouse suites. He was extremely wealthy. And then he met Lama Yeshe. And Lama had such a profound effect on him. He just gave up the whole business. He said he used to pick up the phone and say, I want 10,000 sheep tomorrow, and they'd kill them. That was his business. And Lama had such a profound effect on him that he gave all that up and he, you know, went off to follow Lama, and Lama said, you know, you become monk. And he became Gelsang Gelong, fully ordained, the same day. Very unusual. He just took full ordination, novice ordination, full ordination, the same day. And he went off to do different practices and purify, but he was obsessed with the fact that he'd killed so much. And he was taking care of this Buddhist center in Tushita and Dharamsala, and he just used to get obsessed with the fact that he'd killed a lot. And one day he was saying to my teacher, he said, you know, I've just got so much negative karma from killing. And my teacher looked at him very scornfully and he said, killing karma is nothing, that's easy to purify. He said, you already purified all that. Just working for something, that's gone, that's easy. This is much more difficult karma to purify than that. So there are ways, you see. But it's very, very powerful just recognizing that it was an unskillful action and thinking, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. It's not guilt. Losing guilt and regret. Guilt is when you beat yourself up and you think you're a nasty person. I should be wiped off the face of this earth because I did that. It's like if they, you know, the first night we got here, and I don't know who's cooking, what's her name? Brigitte? Okay, so Brigitte made this delicious soup, remember? How could you forget the delicious soup? I mean, it's like, what did Cherry say? I wanted to marry her straight away. <It's> like, I remember that. You might not remember the course, but you remember the soup. I did this for this course. Somebody wouldn't have said, I don't remember this. Really good soup, first night. So Brigitte made this delicious soup, so we're all just wolfing down this soup. A delicious soup. And then let's say, you know, we come in to do the meditation, and Valentine's doing the meditation, and we're just in the middle of the meditation, and suddenly Cherry runs in and she says, oh! She says, don't panic, everyone, but it looks like there was something in the soup. And we're just taking Yeshi off to hospital. She's got food poisoning, and she's retching and vomiting, and we're all like, oh! Oh, I wish I need that soup. And I had two bowls of it. Oh, no! And that's regret, you see. But you don't think, I'm such a bad person that I drank the soup. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm so... You see the difference? One is motivational, and the other one is paralyzing. Guilt is like paralyzing. It's like, oh, I'm such a bad person. And then you just get stuck. Whereas regret kind of motivates you to do something about it. So understanding the nature of these actions and how they bring suffering and how they set up causes and how we have the possibility to set up these positive causes, we can purify everything. Everything can be purified. My teacher says, there's nothing can be purified. It's not like you're damned. There's no such thing as damnation in Buddhism. In Buddhism, everyone already has pure Buddha nature, so there's nothing can't be purified. So you just purify it. You purify, you let go, you move on. And he says, the more you purify, the more light your mind becomes, the more easy your life is. So I just want to give you one more example of karma, and that example of karma is, for example, two people decide to open a shop and do business. And one has been educated at university, and they've got all the business degrees, and a wealthy family, plenty of money, and they go and they do everything properly, and they get the best side, and they... just, you know, get the best manager, and they just set it all up amazing, immaculate, perfect, and they set up this shop. And the other person just hasn't had a particularly good education, doesn't have a lot of money, they go and borrow some money, and they just kind of rent the place that they can afford, and they set up. And 5 years later, the person who had everything, it just... the business didn't take off, it just failed, it just didn't happen. And the person who had no education, business is flourishing and they're buying more stores. You know, they're just starting at opening a store in Hamilton, opening a store in Nelson, opening a store down in Dunedin, I don't know what, they're just opening stores all over the place. Why? Because one person had the karma for success and the other person didn't. So even all the conditions were there, but they didn't have the karma for success, it didn't happen, they didn't create the cause for it to be successful. And the other person, even though they didn't have anything, but somehow they had the karma for success. Some people are born with all this wealth and money and they lose it all. Other people are born with nothing and they become incredibly rich. So Rinpoche says in the very first chapter, he says, now here we are introduced to the what are we talking about? And we're talking about healing in Tibetan terms. In Tibetan terms, there will be three ways of curing things. So if we get sick, well, I'll just tell you an example Rinpoche gives. He gives an example of skin cancer, and he says, people say skin cancer comes because you're out in the sun. There's no ozone there, as Yeshi says, you know. So you're out in the sun a lot. I keep forgetting this. I never think about it. I suppose I should pay more attention. The first time I came to New Zealand, I was thinking about it, and I've forgotten completely. So Rinpoche says, you know, they say skin cancer comes because you're out in the sun. But I said, well, everyone who goes out in the sun gets skin cancer. Some people spend all day out in the sun, they don't get skin cancer. So there must be something else as well. It's like cooking. You give the same people the same ingredients. Some people cook something so... Like you give them the ingredients that you gave Brigitte to make the soup. If you gave them to me, you would be checking out immediately. You would not be here. Seriously, the same ingredients, the same cooker, the same kitchen. I don't know. Or you give them to Brigitte and it's like, oh, I think we'll stay on a bit longer. I don't know what the nun's saying, but the food is good. It's true, isn't it? Same thing with driving. I mean, you put me in a car and you say drive up to Coromandel, a different experience than putting Vamadundrup in the car. Vamadundrup's going to be so confident and smooth, you know, put me in the car, you're going to be thinking, I could get a lift with somebody else. No, it's just, some people have the karma for success, some people don't, in different areas, because that's what we've, it's the same with gardening. Some people, they make the most incredible gardens, and other people, they spend a lot of money on gardening, and it's just a flop. And they buy plants, and they just die.
So when you say create the cause,
yeah,
if you want to create the cause to success,
yeah,
how do you go about that? That's all once again in the mind.
Yeah, all comes from the intention, the mind. All coming from the mind. So in this case, what kind of cause do you want to create? We want to create the causes to be able to eliminate the anger in our minds, to develop compassion, to develop wisdom. We want to create those causes. So therefore, what do? We stop harming, and we start kind of consciously making an effort to think, how wonderful it would be if today I could do something meaningful with my life. How wonderful it would be if today I could do something really kind for one person. You see, and you build up slowly like this. How wonderful it would be if I could be near the Dalai Lama. And then some situation hits, and you're, oh, and then you think, okay, what would the Dalai Lama do in this situation? And you start creating the cause, you see, it's become like that. So if you create the cause, you have to get a result. If you don't create the cause, the result doesn't manifest. So Rinpoche is saying that when we look in terms of sickness, now with sickness you can look at an outer cause, an inner cause, and what I call a secret cause. Actually, you can say a secret cause, an extremely secret cause. But the outer cause for sickness. Let's say if we're dealing with skin cancer, I guess you could say the outer cause is the sun. And what do you do when you get skin cancer? Do you go to the doctor? Do you have surgery? They take off that, they graft it or something? Yeah. So you have an outer cause there, and the outer cause is sun. So what do? You go to the doctor because you have a disease. You have a sick. Go to the doctor, and the doctor knows what to do. You know, I guess they send you to hospital, and you get the skin removed. And that's the outer solution. Then you have an inner cause. And what are the inner cause for our sicknesses? Well, the inner causes for our sicknesses are our disturbed minds. Anger, hatred, desire, craving, jealousy, all these disturbed minds, they actually create the cause of sickness. If you have a lot of hatred, then it's been proved scientifically, angry people have high blood pressure, huge stress rates, they're more likely to die of heart attacks, they just physically they're not so healthy. So same thing, if you have a lot of desire, you're more likely to get sick. When your mind is more in the nature of contentment, more in the nature of compassion, then you're more healthy. So the inner causes of sickness are the disturbed minds. What are the secret causes of sickness? Secret cause of sickness is the imprints we've created in the past. Secret because we can't see them, you see. Why did two people go out into the sun and one got skin cancer? One has created the cause for this to happen. Don't ask me what the cause was, I don't know. Another hasn't. And you'll find in this book case histories of people who went to see my teacher who were, you know, definitely supposed to die. And he was able to heal them. Why? You know, he checked up, he did observations, and he told one lady who was a fashion consultant, she was supposed to die of cancer, and he said, look, you know, keep pure ethics and go and liberate a lot of animals. And she was very wealthy, and she went off and she bought a huge number of chickens, and then she kind of found this barn, and she put all these chickens in this barn, these chickens were going to be killed, she put them all in the barn, and she took care of them until they died. And she got better. So, previous life, the result of killing in the past, which hadn't been purified, that imprint hadn't been purified, ripened as her having to experience a short life. That was the karma. The karma of having shortened the lives of others ripened as that she was going to experience a short life. So Rinpoche said, okay, go off and do this. She went off and did it. And when she went back to the doctor, she was okay, and the doctors couldn't understand. And that went on for a while, but then I think what happened is she degenerated again. She stopped taking care, she stopped keeping them around, she stopped taking care, and again the sickness came back. So one thing when people have some kind of life-threatening disease or sickness, one thing the lamas often advise is to go and save lives, because a short life in this life can indicate that in the past, you see, this karma is ripening very fast in this life. So, and they say, well, even if it doesn't stop the sickness, but at least you're doing something to purify that cause now, so it won't happen again. Also then, Rinpoche had people, there was one person who came who had AIDS, and he was definitely supposed to die, and then Rinpoche told him to do a meditation on compassion called Tonglen, which we should talk about. And so he did this meditation, and what you do in this meditation is you actually visualize taking on the suffering of all living beings. You imagine taking it on yourself, and you imagine giving them everything that you have. So you actually you imagine all the sickness and disease everyone else experienced, and you imagine actually taking that into your heart and destroying all your selfish minds. And then in place of your selfish minds, you imagine all this unconditional love, and you just send that out to others. Now, this guy, Rinpoche says he was given this meditation by his teacher, and he went off and he did it. And Rinpoche says, you know, he didn't do it for very long. It's not like he spent hours doing it, he just did it for a few minutes at a time. But Rinpoche says when he did it, he really did it with strong faith. He really did this practice, and as a result, when he went back, they couldn't find any signs of disease anymore. So why? Because his sickness was arising through these disturbed minds, so the force of compassion was so powerful that it was able to do the healing. So there are also very powerful mantras that you can recite to purify the imprints that are ripening. Once karma has actually started to ripen, it's very difficult to stop it, but you can stop it before it ripens. So the secret cause is, you know, are these all the imprints from all these actions we've done in the past, which if they've not been purified, manifest. What would be the extremely secret? Oh, I know it's extremely secret, I don't want to say that. Anyway, another unmanifest cause of sickness, the disturbed winds. In Tibetan medicine, Chinese, just as in Chinese medicine, there is a belief that there are subtle energy systems and subtle pathways. We call them the winds, and that actually the mental energies, they actually ride on these winds. So these winds get disturbed when there are negative emotions. So anger, attachment, desire, you know, they disturb the inner nervous system, and that causes the different elements in the body, you know, there's wind, air, earth, fire, right? Which manifests as bile and phlegm and wind and moisture. Is that the word? Did I get wrong? Only three? Anyway, they're related to the four elements, but they manifest as sickness. So if you're a very angry person, it disturbs all these different winds, and that's why it manifests as these different sickness. So we can't see that also. But if you practice meditation, if you purify, if you develop a calm mind, if you have pure ethics, if you have your mind is peaceful, your mind is at peace, then you also have pacified these winds. then you can come to the point where you actually bring them under control. So therefore, you have a sickness, but you can, like one of my teachers, Lama Yeshe, his heart was 3 times larger than normal. And he actually, he survived about 12 or 14 years longer than he should have, because he actually bypassed it. He kind of like, he'd done some kind of internal meditation, he's actually bypassing the, don't ask me how he did it. His heart was 3 times larger than a normal heart. He passed away, he's the same, born the same year as His Holiness Dalai Lama, but he passed away in his 50s. And he'd actually bypassed the arteries, main arteries, and bypassed the heart. I don't know how he did it. That's how he survived. So through meditation you can actually do things like this. So different causes for sickness and different causes for wellness. So there's an explanation of karma. And so this morning when I talked about the Four Noble Truths, I haven't done the first one yet, the suffering. Truth of suffering. But they say that all the different sufferings we experience, all the problems we experience, they're basically they arise, why? From the causes, and the causes are what? The causes are the disturbed minds, our not knowing, our ignorance, our desires, our uncontrolled desire, contaminated desire, uncontrolled desire, our hatred and so forth. And the actions that these cause us to create, in other words, karma. So delusions and karma are the causes. And so, and all of these, they can be ceased. Because if you eliminate from your mind hatred, and you eliminate from your mind desire, and you eliminate uncontrolled desire, and you eliminate ignorance, unknowing, through developing wisdom, compassion, based morality, then once you've totally eliminated that, you never create any negative action, so there's no longer any cause suffering, there's only cause happiness. And that is the path. The path is explaining how to do that. So I think it's very good to have an explanation of karma, because you hear this word a lot. You can think of karma as being three things: the action, the imprint, and the result. Now we should all go to the beach. Is there any question?
I understand Lama Yeshe could also call his friends on the evening he died to say, not come to you.
Really? I didn't hear that one. Oh, he died in Cedar Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles, and he was in intensive care. He had Lama Sopo was my teacher was with him, and also some other students were there with him. He died painlessly. The Karmapa died of cancer, didn't he? The previous Karmapa died of cancer. And the story goes that he was in these agonizing manifestations of this sickness, and the doctors would walk in and say, "Are you all right?" And he'd say, "Yeah, great." Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, couldn't work out what's going on. And his last words, anybody heard his last words? The last words that he said was, "Nothing happens. Nothing happens." Oh, I'd have to give some explanation of that. And so I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. It's a Buddhist view of reality, two truths. So do we more or less cover the first chapter now? The first chapter. Now. So one nice way to think about karma is in the sense of, you know, it's not fatalistic. It means that whatever action you do affects everything. You're totally in control. The Buddha actually taught the law of karma, cause and effect, to empower us. That's not fatalistic at all. Okay, I'm going to finish there. I've got to give one more talk tomorrow. So. Listen to say it, and then I think you'll be quite happy to go home. You'll think, wow, those things. Yeah?
The three rightful mantras.
Oh, Dzampagyare.
Who
is that? Oh, Dzampagyare. The three rightful mantras of Dzampagyare. T-S-A-N-G. P-A, Tsangpa, Gyare, G-Y-A-R-E. He was a great meditator, great Kagyu master, Tsangpa Gyare. Whatever comes, just let it come. Whatever goes, let it go. I don't have need of anything.
And the rough for a bit.
Hmm.
We meant to kind of be very strong. Is that why they call them rough?
Wrathful. I think they say wrathful because it clears away all obstacles. Whatever obstacle you might have will be cleared away by reciting these three things. I think that's why they say wrathful. It's a forceful way to eliminate any obstacles you might have to practice. Yeah, okay. So maybe just recite a few mantras and dedicate. Om Namo Proverb, and it says, if you want to know what you were in the past, look at your present life. If you want to know what you will be in your future, look at your present actions. So we are a continuity of this body and this mind, and we're directing it through our intentions, through our actions. Whether positive or whether negative, our choice is completely in our hands. It's like we come to a crossroads and we can go this way, we can go that way. And it's totally up to us, completely in our hands. What we do from now on, completely, totally. How we live our lives, why, the reason, the purpose, everything. It's all given to us to mould and to shape. Just like having dough in the hands that you can mould any way that you want and do the same thing. Self-cherishing others, which is the source of all success and happiness for myself and every single being, immediately generated within my own mind, the minds of all living beings. Now, what has generated meant not to generate, but increase more and more. Ngā rīrā wē ngō e Siddham Adhutam Yurji. And if you look back over your life and you see things that you regret,